Hello and welcome to the Parentnet podcast by Focus on the Family Singapore. In each podcast, we'll be tackling questions that parents are asking about family life, parenting, work life, and so much more. So join us on this journey of discovery together.
Hello and welcome to the Parentnet podcast. My name is June and I'm your host for this episode. Every parent wants the best for their child, and this is especially true during the major transitions of their child's life. Graduating from school, choosing a university course, entering the workforce, or even enlisting in national service. How can a parent walk alongside their young adult in these defining moments? In today's episode, we'll explore these questions and more. And I'm really happy to have our guest, Dawn Ip, in our studio today. She is a mother to three sons, aged 19 to 24. So welcome to the Parentnet podcast, Dawn. Could you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Hey, June, it's a pleasure to be here. And just a little bit about me. I've been married for 25 years now to the same guy. And along the way, we had three boys. Mm-hmm. They're aged 24. That one is in university, a 22-year-old who's also in university, and a 19-year-old who's at a polytechnic.
Thanks for sharing that you're still married to the same guy.
You can't assume that these days.
So I'm wondering, as your sons transition from their teenage years into young adulthood, how did your relationship with them change?
I would start by saying it's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of learning on behalf on the parent's side. I would say the relationship became more about giving them space to take the lead, to make choices. And that would be in areas like academics, maybe relationships with the opposite sex. And I saw myself as providing guidance and guardrails. For instance, we would give them counsel on dating. We said, for instance, that it would really help if the person was of the same faith. They should try and avoid situations where they would be alone with that person with the opposite sex. And maybe premarital sex is really not a good idea. But short of that, we didn't really influence who they chose to date. Not that it would be possible anyway. I think one of the areas that I remember having to think through this quite specifically is when they were thinking about post-secondary education.
Right.
One of my sons intuitively knew that polytechnic would be a better fit for him than junior college. Another of my sons was originally admitted to polytechnic, but after thinking about it, ended up choosing junior college instead. We realized actually they did have thoughts and views of their own. When I say, I mean, it's myself and my husband. We saw our role really as just listening to them, asking them questions to understand their thinking, maybe challenging them a little bit if there was a need to, but ultimately really supporting both those choices. Quite unreservedly.
You talked about dating and relationships, and then you also talked about decisions about post-secondary school choices. Two very different domains, and yet you played that listener role. You mentioned guidance and guardrails. Can you tell me a little bit more?
I suppose the easiest way to think about it is guidance is what to do and guardrails is what not to do. Perhaps what comes most naturally for me as a mom or maybe us as parents is what not to do. And then beyond the not to do, really, the world is your oyster to go and explore. I think the risk, certainly speaking for myself as a mother, is for the not to do list to be oppressively long.
Yes.
So certainly when it came to dating, I think it was really just about paring it down to the most crucial things, which in our case was, you know, a common faith background we thought would be really helpful. And this thing, you know, the nightmare scenario about sort of maybe if your son gets a girl pregnant and that kind of thing. We love them no matter what. We talked to them about these scenarios and we said, we've got your backs. And we shared stories about, you know, families we knew where that had happened. So just offering those two perspectives, right? What you might like to do in a relationship, but also really the big challenges that you'd like to avoid.
And that's kind of like reality, right? Because as parents, sometimes in our head, the not-to-do list can get very long.
That's right.
But as your child grows and they have their own, I guess, preferences, they have their own ways of thinking. And although you have probably spent a considerable amount of time investing your values, sharing your belief systems with them, they still have to come into their own at some point. And I thought that when you said paring it down to really what you think are the most essential, that few was quite valuable to me as a parent of young teenagers and thinking about my future in terms of how I might also be guiding them and providing those guardrails, as you said.
Part of this, I think, for me, comes from my own upbringing. I think we parent the way we were parented. And both my parents were educators, so I think they intuitively knew how to deal with young people. My mom taught in a secondary school, my father taught in a junior college, so they understood teenage people in particular. And they were always there to guide, but I don't ever remembering them being very bossy or directive. So I think naturally I adopted that style when my kids were that age. So I think that was very helpful.
Thanks for sharing about your experience being parented by your own parents. I was wondering, when it comes to, you know, decisions about university or even career, did those sort of conversations just come about naturally from your sons, or did you have to sort of lead and direct them in certain ways?
I think one thing I'm really thankful for is that my sons, by and large, are quite sensible young men. So the range of options that they were looking at, really, we were quite comfortable with all of them. We're not particularly sort of ambitious parents. We don't need them to be, you know, great scholars or high achievers in whatever domains. For me, it's about helping them find things that fit their strengths, their giftings. So as long as they were in the right ballpark, I think we were quite comfortable. The conversations were largely around just exploring what options they were looking at, what criteria they are using to decide, and maybe offering other options for them to consider. I had the benefit of doing my university in a different country than Singapore, and I know that really made a difference for me. So I kept poking them, you know, to say, why don't you think about maybe doing some part of your university overseas, or all of it overseas? They weren't at that point very keen, which I felt was a small pity, but I realized really this is their life. And they had good reasons why they wanted to stay in Singapore. And so ultimately, I respected that decision.
It sounds like they had their own thoughts already, and then they came to you to bounce off those possibilities with you, and you never had to have a very strong hand in guiding them towards any decision.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, now that you're asking me the question, I don't ever think I was asked for my approval as such. And maybe in their minds, they were asking me for approval, but I never felt like I was being asked for approval, maybe input at best.
Right.
So that's interesting. I mean, I think I intuitively knew they're just really at the stage. The options are all okay.
Right.
So the choice is ultimately theirs to make.
Wow, that's an interesting observation, because when your kids are younger, probably you might be a little bit more directive. You might have a little bit more say in their choices, whether it's a secondary school or the bit after that. So I'm hearing that this is quite different, and it's something that probably there's some trust already that they are going along the right track.
I think so. If any of my kids had perhaps chosen a course of study that was really out of left field, I better not name professions. I mean, people might think I'm sort of judging them, but I think just the options were nothing unconventional, nothing controversial. Mm. They just wanted to go to the local universities and polytechnics, chose something that to me made sense from their own giftings and strengths. So we never really had to have difficult conversations about course.
I'm just dying to ask, because it's like... What if it was something a little bit unconventional? Like, for example, I don't know, something to do with art or music, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I guess that comes to the question of what I would do if my sons made choices that I didn't agree with. And certainly there have been those scenarios. And I'm preaching to myself here, okay? But the important thing is to make a distinction between a moral choice and a preference. And by and large, a lot of these things are preferences. I know there's a sort of huge gray zone in between. If my sons wanted to specialize in bank robbery, for instance, I mean, I would have a thing or two to say.
Yes.
But
so would our local law enforcement.
Yeah. If they wanted to sort of do a Breaking Bad and start a drug business, you know, back room, I think I have a huge problem with that, and would suddenly have a much stronger view. But short of those extreme scenarios, I mean, I think largely it's about preference. Of course, as a parent, my preferences are shaped by maturity and experience, so I think my view comes from Walla. But I accepted that they may see it differently. So, I mean, a few examples come to mind. These are less about university than they were about maybe earlier on. One of my sons played rugby at school. Now, quite honestly, I had a lot of reservations about the sport. And if anyone's listening and is a rugby player, I seek your forgiveness. I really do have reservations because it's known for
My son's a rugby player.
Is he now? Do you have?
We can. Quite young. Maybe we can take this offline.
We can take this offline, but it is known objectively for a high incidence of injuries. But he was very keen on the sport, and I could see that he was keen. So I decided I would hold back my own concerns and let him decide as he wished. Of course, he ended up joining rugby, but I was not thrilled when he dislocated his shoulder. So that's one example. Another one that's maybe a little bit more pointed is one of my sons, and I've mentioned their ages already, so they're still pretty young in the grand scheme of things. One of my sons wants to get married early. He has a serious girlfriend, and he was talking to us about getting married as soon as possible because they wanted to start their new life together. Well, my strong preference was that he would finish school and secure a job first. And both my husband and I shared this with them, our reasons why we thought this would be the wise choice. But we're also clear, I think, in that we discussed it ourselves privately and we said, honestly, he's an adult. You can never force them to do something that's against their will. So we made it clear that he's now an adult. We see it that way, but the ultimate decision is finally his to make. So I think that once our children reach a young adult stage, we need to recognize the relationship shifts from I command, you obey, to I guide, I advise, and with any luck, they might honor and respect your counsel.
I have a teen and I'm already feeling it.
Right? Yeah. Like so, 15 going on 27, right. That kind of thing.
Thanks for sharing the different tensions that you have to navigate, the different areas where there might be more disagreement. You mentioned about the time when your son wanted to get married early and then he sounded you out on that. That must have been a very difficult conversation to have.
I would say so. But the first thing I said to my husband afterwards was, hey, he talked to us about it. He needn't have done that. And I think every time any of my kids, and I really shouldn't call them kids anymore, but my sons come and speak to me or seek my counsel, I think my heart does a little dance because it means they still value my input and not as a sort of token thing. They value my point of view and the inputs I have to give. So it starts with that, I guess, and I'm grateful every time they do that.
So when they are at a kind of a crossroad, when they are at a very major milestone of their lives, what are some practical ways you and your husband both do, you know, to support them while talking them through? While sharing your own views, what are other ways that you did to make them feel supported and also empowered to actually make the decision themselves?
So where I would start is, and it's almost a cliche to say this, but it really, really starts with good listening. I think as adults, our tendency, and I am again preaching to myself here, the tendency is always to jump in quickly with advice and counsel and my point of view. But I do my best to listen carefully, get the details, ask more questions than I give answers, affirm when I think they're on the right track, and then offer the suggestions or views when it's helpful. I think one area, if you know what your children's strengths and giftings are, really call those out when you see them in operation. So sometimes their so-called wrong choices might actually be a result of their strength. For instance, they're very firm, very clear-minded, maybe a little bit stubborn, you know. But it is a strength because in life, you need some resilience and strength of purpose in order to get things done. So affirm the things that validate the things you see that are strengths. And then, of course, the sort of offering of suggestions or views where that's helpful. One thing is to maybe tell your own story, your own life narrative, or maybe those of people within the family that they might be familiar with. Because life is lived in stories and narrative form, right? Not in do's and don'ts. And by telling stories, I mean, they can then see what you're trying to say about why such a choice is good or bad, recommended or not recommended. I think the bottom line really is that I hope my sons know that I'm always there for them. I have their backs. I love them unconditionally. That to me is the foundation.
Thanks for sharing that. I'm hearing the importance of just being that very attentive listener to them when they are sharing their particular journey with you and also affirming their strengths. Each time you have an opportunity and every time you see it, call it out, even if it borders on stubbornness, you know, it's still a strength in the sense that this person is very clear about what he or she wants. Just being there for them and letting them know that you have their backs. These are such small yet important ways to help our children know that we are there for them. And no matter what happens, no matter what mistakes or wrong choices are made, they still have us to come home to. And there is always a safe shelter for them in our home.
One of the interesting things I picked up just from, I guess, books I've read and podcasts I've listened to, I think it's the Gottman Institute that developed this idea around you need a container of five positive things or five encouraging things in order to have the space to share the one negative feedback. I'm guessing it's evidence-based, but that number stayed with me, right? Five is 2-1, because I know in my own experience, that's true. Like, I will only accept negative feedback from someone whom I have a positive relationship overall, right? And so I think that applies to our relationships with our children as well. There should be a general atmosphere of affirmation, and that then gives you the space when you need to sort of address the challenging issues, the problem.
Yeah, I like that ratio, 5-1. I'm bearing that in mind when I go back to my children today.
And I'm not saying I've met it either, right? But it's just an interesting metric to keep in mind.
Yeah, because it's so easy to just hone in on all the things that went wrong or all the things that weren't done that they said they would do and then immediately jump on their case on it. Right now, this is kind of like reminding ourselves to hold back on that and to look at the atmosphere that we are creating. And that really helps to support the relationship with you and your young adults in the home.
So now that I hear you say this back to me, I am laughing at myself because I know that I nag my sons. I mean, they live at home, out of term time. They live at home and, you know, the little things like you're not throwing out the trash, not locking the door, small things that irk me every day. And I nag just like I suppose many moms would. And I don't think that really helps to create an atmosphere of affirmation. So I'm just reminding myself of that as well.
Yeah, thanks for being real, Dawn. I mean, we're all in the same, right? Even as you said that, I was thinking of the missing sock that I found, you know, lying around somewhere that was meant to be in the laundry basket days ago. But yes, okay, breathe.
Take a deep breath,
yes, June. Take a deep breath. And then, yes, 5-1, something good to remember and to tune our mind towards all the good things that we can call out, we can appreciate about our kids, because they're not going to be with us forever. And we do want to have that strong connection with them. And I think that really is kind of like the invisible foundation to what we've been talking about today, even as we navigate the different decisions, the big decisions, the small decisions. At the end of the day, as you mentioned, you know, your heart did a happy dance whenever they come to you. And that is really a sign of the strong relationship that you have built over the years. Thank you, Dawn. I'm inspired.
You're welcome.
I've got the 5-1 in my head. I've got the listen and affirm. And then at the end, if there is an opportunity, give your advice. Yeah, it's so good to have you here. And I think earlier you were talking about the importance of sharing our stories, whether it's our own, the different mistakes we have made, or it's someone else in the family, or it's a friend. And really, we learn all through stories. And today, you have actually shared your story as well. And I believe our listeners have picked up a thing or two. If you have any last word of advice or any last stories you'd like to leave with our listeners today who might be navigating a similar journey or life stage as you.
So I think one milestone in my journey with my children as a parent, so we had a helper for a number of years, and I know many Singaporean families do. And at some point, our helper went back after 10 years with us. And of course, the big question then we had to grapple with was, should we hire another live-in helper or try and go without? And in everything in me said, no, of course we need a helper because I'm a working mom. I need to, you know, make time for work and that kind of thing. But I think after some discussion, my husband and I felt it's time for them to learn a little bit more independence. The house might be a bit messier, but they really need to learn some independence. And honestly, that was a really good decision. My kids were at the time, I think the oldest was 12, the youngest was 6. And they learned to cook. They learned to do their own laundry. They learned to clean the house. They learned to iron, imperfectly, of course. I mean, I remember after a big dinner, like, you know, the wok, and it's very oily, and one of them would wash, and I would go back and just check, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's still a layer of oil on the wok. So I'd have to wash all over again. But I told myself, no, this is good for them. They have to learn to wash a wok at some point in their lives, so why not now? So that was quite an important milestone, because they learn a lot of independence that they mightn't have had we still had a live-in helper.
Wow, thanks for sharing your story. It gives me hope for my own children that they will learn to wash a wok one day soon.
I'll tell another funny story because we were training our children to do their own laundry, right? So they have to take their clothes, put them in a laundry basket. And we wanted them to learn to use the washing machine. Everyone does their own load. Once it's piled up enough, you do your own load. One evening, I noticed that my son had been wearing the same pair of pajamas for many, many nights. So I said, didn't I see you in this last week? And he said, yeah, I'm trying to reduce the laundry, you know, so I don't change my clothes so often. I'm like, okay, so there's a hygiene question here. And then it occurred to me to ask, you know, how often do you change your underwear and your socks? And let's just say that the number was not a healthy number. So it was hilarious because his interest was to try and reduce the pace of laundry, but hygiene was really being severely compromised. So that's how he learned that, yes, one does have to change one's socks and underwear frequently, shall we say. Fortunately nipped in the bud, but yeah, yes. Still, it was quite shocking.
Wow. I wish I could keep you here longer to tell us more stories, hilarious ones as well as inspiring ones. But yes, thank you so much, Dawn. And I really enjoyed our conversation today. I'm sure many of our listeners have as well. So we hope to have you back.
Thank you, June.
Thank you, Dawn. For more of our parenting resources, remember to go to www.family.org.sg/subscribe. And if this episode resonated with you, hit follow to stay connected and leave us a review or share it with a friend or your community. So that's it for today. Do keep tuning in to the Parenet podcast to learn and grow in your parenting journey.